Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When Monsters Lie by Debbie Cassidy. Narrated by Arlene Seberg. Chapter 1. The monsters circled the building. 6, maybe 7 of them. Hard to get a proper count with all the shifting shadows. The Rippers were type 2 denizens. Arachnid-type creatures about as large as a rhino with wide serrated maws and 5-inch claws. They were seriously fast on land and could strip a human to nothing but bone in minutes. Hence the name, Rippers. Thankfully, they hated sunlight, and the 2 portable UV lamps we'd brought with us were the only things stopping them from attacking. Behind me, in the brightly lit room of the abandoned building, Jared screamed like a banshee. Pip, our medic, let out a string of colorful curses. Hush, okay, I know. Hush, let me... Shit, Jared, shit. B, I turned my head to find my second. How's he looking? She sucked on her cheeks, shaking her head. This ain't no duct tape job, Rue. I turned away from the monsters and back to the scene inside. Jared sat propped against a wall, legs splayed in front of him like a broken marionette. He screamed in agony, batting at Pip's hands as she tried to duct tape his ripped torso shut. But his intestines weren't cooperating. Pip's hands trembled as she brushed back the dark tendrils of hair that had escaped from her ponytail before tearing off another strip of tape and trying to slap it onto the wound. Blood bubbled up to cover her hands, and the tape slipped from her fingers. Oh, crap. Pip? She glanced back at me with wide, frightened eyes. It won't stick. I can't, Rue. I can't. Please. Jared pleaded with me. Rue, please make it stop. My heart sank and my stomach trembled because I knew what he was asking for. Rue, I'll do it, B offered. I inhaled through my nose and exhaled through my mouth to steel myself. No, it's on me. It was always on me. That was part of the job. I pulled my pistol from its holster and approached Jared. He'd been with me for 2 years, the engineer of my team. Quirky, funny, brave. He didn't deserve to go out like this. I'm sorry, Jared. Pip stepped away and turned her back. Now that Pip wasn't trying to shove his insides back into his body, there were no more screams, just sobbing and quick, shallow breaths that made his whole torso shake. I kept my eyes on his face, not wanting to see the mess the monster had made of his abdomen. Maybe we should have left him to die back there. Might have been a mercy for us all. Do it, Rue. Pain had etched lines into his face. Make it quick. I can't. Please. I adjusted the silencer on the gun. The weapon, useless against the monsters that had taken over our world, was given to us for one reason alone. Mercy. Please. Jared begged with his eyes. I swallowed the lump in my throat and pressed the gun to his temple. For a moment, another face peered back at me, with pain-filled, cocoa eyes. I blinked away the memory. Sleep well, Jared. The shot was nothing but a puff of air and a jarring vibration up my arm. Jared's eyes flew wide and then drifted closed. Gone. I stood, tucking the gun back in its holster, blinking against the heat of tears. There was no time for grief. We were 5 miles from base and a 0.5 mile from our backup ride. No fucking way was I getting eaten by these fuckers this close to the finish line, not with the bounty we'd managed to pick up. The backpack filled with antibiotic pills, antihistamines, and various other meds parked in the middle of the room needed to find its way back to base. Lives depended on it. I took a moment to compose myself and lock away the horror of what I'd just done. My chest ached with pressure, with the need to scream. But falling apart was not an option. How much power do we have left? Maybe 1/2 hour, if that, B said. It was 2 hours until dawn. We couldn't risk waiting it out, but 30 minutes of power might get us to our ride now that we didn't have an injured party to haul. The Jeep was kitted out with more UV lights. If we made it, we'd be safe. What are you thinking, Rue? B asked. B, my second, my training partner, and my best friend never doubted, never questioned. Not while we were out in the field, anyway. Her petite stature and heart-shaped face usually threw people off guard, but I'd seen her bring down guys much larger than her on the sparring mats, and she never missed a shot. She should have become a sweeper, but she'd chosen to be a scout, like me, to stay with me. I wouldn't let her regret that decision. I looked out the window again. Were more of them out there now? I say we make a break for it. What? Pip stared at me in horror. You want to go out there with those creatures waiting for us, after what they did to Jared? That was exactly what I wanted to do. If we stay here, we'll die. If we make a break for it, there's a chance of survival, a chance to get these meds back to base, to those who need them. We move out. Now. It was an order, and not up for discussion. Pip closed her eyes and shook her head. Her breathing quickened and her hands curled into fists. We shouldn't have come. We shouldn't have... Poor kid, it was only her third scouting mission. She hadn't had time to become desensitized to the threat and was spiraling into a full-blown panic attack. B crossed the room and slapped her hard across the face. Snap the fuck out of it. Pip clutched her cheek and sobbed. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I sighed. Time for a pep talk. I scrolled through the prepared scripts in my arsenal of morale-boosting shit, stuff we'd been taught in case of a mental breakdown. This one would have to do. Pip, I need you. You're the only one who can keep us alive if we get injured out there. Do you understand? You're essential to this team. Her gaze flicked to Jared's dead body. It wasn't hard to read the guilt etched across her features. Not your fault. He was dead before we hauled him in here. You couldn't have saved him, but you might be able to save us. I need to know you're with us. Her jaw tensed, chin coming up in determination. I got this. Good. Now let's get the fuck out of here. I grabbed one of the UV lamps that bathed the room in light and B grabbed the other. They were lightweight and had straps that allowed us to haul them onto our backs like packs. Stay between us. B handed Pip the meds. You're our cargo, and we'll damn sure protect your ass. Got it? Pip shrugged on the pack, holding the meds. I led the way to the door. There was no way to avoid being seen or chased, but the lights would keep them at a distance and stop them from attacking. At least, that's what I hoped. Ready? Ready, B and Pip said in unison. I yanked open the door and hauled ass into the night. First thing we were taught in training is if they can't catch you, they can't kill you. Stamina was key for scouts and sweepers, although in the case of sweepers, it was for fighting the monsters, not running from them. Sweepers had the heavy arsenal and kept Sector A around our base settlement safe. Scouts got the Mercy pistols, UV lamps, and orders to move fast and stealthy. We'd been lucky we'd only attracted the attention of Ripper monsters. The Type 3s had appendages they could whip out to snag their prey. Some even spat acid. Then there were Type 4s, humanoid and highly intelligent. At least, that's what I'd heard. I'd never seen one myself. I sprinted up the rubble-littered road, dodging debris and weaving between abandoned cars. Hard to imagine that people had lived out here once. Without walls, without the sonic vibrations that kept the monsters at bay. Rue, we have incoming! B cried. A fresh wave of rippers rushed onto the road from the building to our left, attempting to cut us off. Keep moving. We have the lights. We picked up speed, legs and arms pumping. We'd lost our ride to a flat tire. A fucking flat tire. Because someone at base had forgotten to place a spare in the trunk after debrief checks. But backup rides were hidden at various coordinates in a 20-mile radius to base. These fuckers are hungry, B panted. Yeah, they should have dropped back, given up after the first mile. Rippers were usually territorial and stuck to a certain hunting ground. Not tonight, it seemed. They stayed with us as we ran, keeping their distance to avoid the light radiating from us, but never letting up. We're almost there, B said. Take the next right. Yeah, I know it. We swerved onto the next residential street with the rippers on our ass. Their eerie shrieks reverberated in my head, making it hard to focus, to remember which fucking garage held our prize. "Number 432, B yelled. "I see the mark." I saw it too, a crimson X on a white garage door. We cut up the path and Pip grabbed the doors and hauled them up to reveal a dark, empty space. My heart sank. The backup ride was gone. Chapter 2. I stared at the spot where the vehicle should have been, rage bubbling inside my belly. "Someone is so getting fired," B bit out through gritted teeth. "We're gonna die," Pip said softly. She was right. We had minutes of power left on the lamps. Dawn was an hour away, and so was base if we tried for it on foot. We were fucked. The Rippers moved in, their tar-black eyes gleaming with triumph, saliva dripping from their teeth-infested mouths. The click-click of talons on cement made my teeth ache. They'd be tearing into us soon enough. I drew my pistol and checked the chamber. One bullet left. "B?" She cracked open her pistol. "I'm out." "Me too," Pip's voice trembled. "We discharged our weapons earlier to ward off the Rippers." Pip began to cry. "I don't want to be eaten." B and I exchanged glances. We knew what we had to do. "It's okay." B gripped Pip's shoulder. "You can have the last bullet. It won't hurt. It'll be over fast." Our lights flickered. Pip nodded, and I pressed the barrel of my gun to her temple. The lights went out. Pip screamed and shoved me away, throwing my shot wide. "Pip, don't!" B made a grab for her, snagging the pack and tearing it from her, but failing to stop her. Pip ran, wild and scared. The Rippers descended on her like bees on honey. I blocked out her screams. Nothing we could do for her now. I grabbed B's hand and ran. Heart pounding so hard I was sure it would burst from my chest, I ran east toward base. The chances of us making it were slim to none, but like fuck were we going to throw ourselves at the monsters and beg to be eaten. Pip had provided an unplanned distraction, but we'd be lucky if we got more than a few minutes' head start. I unclipped the UV lamp as I ran, allowing it to crash to the ground behind me. B did the same, swinging the med pack onto her back instead. We ran for 2 minutes, maybe three, before the sound of pursuit sent a fresh wave of adrenaline through me. B stumbled, but I grabbed her arm, hauling her with me until she regained her equilibrium. I'd lost 2 members of my team tonight. I wasn't losing another. If we could get as far as Sector A, where the sweepers patrolled, then we might be safe. 30 minutes, tops. 30 minutes of nonstop running. Maybe less, now that we didn't have the UV lamps to carry. "We won't make it, Rue," B panted. "We have to try." "We won't both make it," B amended. "But maybe one of us can." She shoved the med pack at me. "I love you." "What?" She stopped running. "No!" I skidded to a halt. "B, come on." The Rippers were rushing up behind her. She had seconds, if that. "B, please, please." She smiled and dropped me a salute. She was going to die. The stupid bitch was going to... Bright light swept across the road, bathing B and eliciting screeches of pain from the Rippers. A male voice bellowed orders, boots hammered the ground, and silver light lit up the night, emanating from the blades wielded by males and females clad in black combat gear. Silver markings blazed to life on their bare arms, wreathing them in an ethereal glow as they sliced and diced at the Rippers, bringing them down one by one. I dropped to my knees, tears of relief blurring my vision because the sweepers were here. The sweepers were here, and we were going to be okay. The street was littered with Ripper bodies. It was amazing how easily they could be cut down with the right weapons. The blades provided by the Golden City were the only weapons that could kill a monster, or denizens, as the council liked to call them. "Wrap it up, incinerate, and move out," Jamie, the Alpha team leader, ordered. I pulled myself off the ground, strode up to B, and punched her in the face. Her head whipped back from the impact. She turned her head and spat out a gob of blood. "I'm not sorry," she said. I grabbed her by her shirt and hauled her close. Don't you ever do that again, you hear me? You don't get to decide who lives or dies. Neither do you, Rue. Damn her. Damn this whole fucked up situation. I can't lose you. My voice cracked and tears blurred my vision. Ditto, bitch. I pulled her into a quick hug. You're the only bitch around here. Rue, B, we need to go, now, Jamie said, before the scent of their blood attracts more. I looked up at the Alpha team leader and nodded. Thanks for the assist. You're lucky we came by. He looked pissed, but I knew him better than to think his anger was aimed at us. You lost your ride? Flat. No spare. Backup ride wasn't there. We lost Jared and Pip. Fuck. He led us to the sweeper van. Get in. We need to report this to your father. Mention of my father made my stomach hurt. I didn't want to see the disappointment on his face. Jamie hesitated. This is not your fault, Rue. Henry will realize that. I'll speak to him. Jamie and my dad had been buddies for years. He was the only person who could get through to my dad most of the time, but I didn't need him speaking for me. I got this, Jamie. He frowned, and for a moment I thought he'd argue, but then he nodded. Well, let's get back. We climbed into the van and parked our asses on the benches in the back. The doors slammed shut, leaving us in gloomy darkness with three members of Jamie's unit. Sorry about your team, Remy, Jamie's second, said. She didn't look up from cleaning her blade, her bicep muscles bunching and relaxing with the motion. Remy had a reputation for being a hard ass, fucking whomever she wanted, male or female, and cursing like a sailor. Her tolerance level for fools was zero, but she took care of her team. It could have been avoided, B replied. This could all have been avoided. She was right. And the person or people responsible for fucking up were going to pay. Chapter 3. No one knows where the monsters came from. One day, they were just there. They say it took 7 days for our world to be overrun by the denizens. Humanity fought back, but none of our weapons could kill them. When we believed all hope was lost, our saviors arrived. Celestials. Yeah, no one really believed in angels back then. They were creatures of myth, bound in an old religion that many had forgotten. But when the night was the darkest, they came, shining their glorious light and wielding swords of fire to cut down the monsters. They say the war between the monsters and the Celestials waged for a year and a day. And during that time, these beings of light helped humanity to build secure settlements, bases where we could live safely, where we could survive. 22 bases, to be precise. Ours was base 15. They asked for nothing in return, and even provided us with weapons to cut down the monsters and the knowledge on how to best them. The Golden City rose out of the ashes of our capital, seemingly overnight, and the Celestials withdrew from the fight. They'd done what they could. It was up to us to maintain the status quo and stay alive. But every year, a lucky few from each base were permitted entry into the Golden City, the safest domain on Earth. This was the history my generation had grown up on. This was our truth. Rue, we're here, B said. I focused on the sound of metal on metal, distinctive and familiar. We were passing through the gates into Base 15. The van came to a halt. Doors slammed, and a few seconds later the back doors were flung open, admitting the gray light of pre-dawn. Jamie appeared in the doorway, his baby blues dark with fatigue, dark hair mussed. I've radioed Keller. He said he'll see you now for debrief. He stepped aside while his three crew members climbed out, waiting until they were gone before focusing on me again. I can come with you if you want, Rue. His tone was softer now. The tone he used when we were alone. But we weren't alone. Not now. I gave him a reassuring smile and stepped back. I got this. He nodded curtly, recovering himself. You know where to find me if you need me. He strode away. I felt B's gaze on my face. Rue, what was that? Shit. What was what? I gave her an innocent look. She sighed. Nothing. Jamie and I, well, It was complicated, because fucking your dad's friend was frowned upon. It didn't matter that at 33, Jamie was barely 10 years my senior. But it was more than that. It was how I felt about Jamie. Things just weren't that serious, and I didn't want them to be. We were friends with benefits, and that wasn't enough to jeopardize his reputation. I'd thought about telling B, but the last thing I needed was a lecture on the beauty of falling in love. I'd tried that one time, and yeah, it hadn't ended well. I stared up at the mammoth wall that ran around the whole base, all that stood between us and the monsters. Not any ordinary wall, but one that sang with a vibration that was almost melodious. Vibrations created by runes etched into the stone. The monsters didn't like it. It kept them away, and kept us safe. The base was quiet this time of morning. Only the sweepers should have been awake, coming back from patrol. Scouts usually went out during daylight hours, but the tracker teams had reported a steady migration of Type 3 monsters heading toward the hospital in Sector 4 late yesterday afternoon. We'd been asked to take an emergency trip to pick up any supplies we could before it became a hot zone. We shouldn't have gone out. If I'd said no, then Jared and Pip would be alive right now. Was the pack of meds worth it? I wasn't even sure anymore. I let B lead the way past the barracks-style buildings and toward the control tower where the senior military operatives worked and slept. Beyond the tower were more gates opening out into the residential part of the base where civilians lived side by side. There was a shared canteen, a bathhouse, and even a recreational building housing books, games, and a cinema room. The schoolhouse would be closing soon, and the children looked forward to Christmas. The bite in the air warned me that the weather would turn soon, bringing snow. A guard led us into the tower. "Keller's waiting in meeting room B." I passed, but the guard put his arm out to halt B. "Not you." B glared at him. "I need to be there for the debrief." "Alpha Leader Handsome will see you in meeting room C." He jerked his head toward the corridor to our left. B threw me a confused look. Debriefings were usually taken by the same officer, so even if my father refused to see us together, he should still be seeing B at some point, if only to corroborate my account of events. Unless this was about more than what had happened. "Rue?" B looked concerned. I shot her a quick smile. "It's fine. I'll meet you back at home." I climbed the steps to the third floor and pushed through the double doors into my father's domain. As an alpha leader, he oversaw all the sweeper teams and their activities. But he was also on the council, which meant he liaised with the other bases and the Golden City Celestial emissaries. My father was important. People relied on him. He ran this base, and I was proud of him. I just wished he was proud of me, too. I was pretty sure he loved me in an awkward, pat-on-the-back way. Had it been different before my mother died? My memories of him were fuzzy, to say the least, but my mother, she was a bright star in my mind. If I closed my eyes and cast my mind back, I could almost feel her arms around me and hear her gentle voice as she told me a story. Her favorite was about the night I was born. "The stars fell for you, Rue, and it stayed that way for 7 days." Yeah, she'd made it sound so beautiful and romantic, but the reality had been anything but. The stars had brought the monsters with them. They'd taken my mother from me, and as a result, my father, too. The monsters changed our world, and now my father and I were strangers who shared the same DNA. Joining the guard had been my way of getting closer to him, but when he'd blocked my application to become a sweeper, it had been the final blow, telling me all I needed to know. He didn't think I was good enough, not as a daughter and not as an officer in his army. Unfortunately for him, I'm a stubborn bitch. I couldn't be a sweeper, so I'd opted to become a scout. I entered the meeting room to find him standing with his back to me, looking out the window. I wasn't sure what he got from a view of the wall, but I'd seen him in the same pose so many times that I figured he got some comfort out of staring at the mammoth rock face that kept us safe. The door closed behind me with a soft snick that drew his attention. He turned to face me, raking me over with an assessor's regard, before crossing the room and pulling me into a hug. I tensed. What the fuck? I couldn't recall the last time we'd hugged, but it felt nice. Increment by increment, I allowed my body to relax, and just as I was about to hug him back, he released me and stepped away, putting a couple feet of distance between us. "I'm glad to see you unharmed," he said. "Jamie told me what happened. I have someone looking into the protocol failure." It took a moment for me to swallow the lump of unexpected emotion. "We lost two people today." I wasn't sure why I told him that. He probably already knew. But this was a debrief, so the details had to come from me. "I'm sorry, Rue. I know how hard it is to lose good men and women. But I assure you, the person or persons responsible for failing the vehicle checks and replacing the backup vehicle will be reprimanded." A reprimand meant discharge from the guard, which meant fewer rations and privileges. It was too small a price to pay for negligence that had cost two lives. And from the look on my father's face, he recognized this too. It gave me the gall to push further. "We shouldn't have been asked to go out that late." My father's jaw tensed. "From what I hear, you brought back plenty of medication." "We did, but those medications save lives, Rue. The objective was met." "Agreed, but we should have had a sweeper with us. Better yet, there should be a sweeper on every scout team." He frowned, and hell if he wasn't considering it. "I'm trained. If you just let me take the test, I can..." "No." I flinched at the snap in his tone. I was a grown-ass woman, but that tone never failed to act as a smackdown. I tucked in my chin, gathering my composure because this was too important an issue to back down. "I know you think I'm not strong enough, but I was the top of my combat class. If I had a celestial blade, I could protect my team." He was silent for a long beat, studying me with a look of confused revelation. "You think I doubt your skill?" Was he serious right now? "You blocked my application for sweeper. What else was I supposed to think?" He took a shuddering breath and looked away.
"Yes. Yes, I did."
"Why?" I'd never asked this question, too afraid to hear my suspicions and doubts confirmed. But it was time for him to look me in the eye and admit it. "Why did you block me? Not just from that year, but from every year." He looked away, rolling his bottom lip into his mouth as if mulling something over. My scalp pricked. "What the hell is going on? What aren't you telling me?" He strode around his desk and pulled a sheet of paper from a drawer.
"Read and sign that."
I plucked the document from his fingers and scanned it. "A non-disclosure agreement?" He passed me a pen.
"You want to know the truth, then sign it."
Curiosity was my Achilles heel. I scrawled my signature over the paper, then handed it back to him. He put the paper back into his desk drawer.
"This information does not leave this room, Rue, or I will act on the terms of this agreement and remove you from this base. Am I clear?"
His gaze was direct and unflinching. I believed him.
"I won't breach it."
He took a deep breath and looked me in the eye.
"The people who don't come back from testing haven't been selected for the Golden City like everyone is told."
"Okay. Then where do they go?"
"They don't go anywhere, Rue. They're dead."
Chapter 4. My father's words were a sucker punch, and for a moment I was speechless.
"How? I mean, I don't understand how the cadets can be dead."
He pressed his lips together and exhaled through his nostrils.
"The test is the serum. It allows the sweepers to wield the blades provided by the Celestials."
"I thought the tattoos did that." He shook his head.
"The runes are useless without the serum to activate them, but not everyone survives taking it."
I knew about the serum. I'd seen Jamie take it a few times, but no one had said anything about it potentially being lethal, which meant...
"They don't know, do they? The cadets don't know the risk?"
He made a sound of impatience.
"Of course they don't. Do you think half as many would apply for sweeper if they knew the serum could kill them?"
He looked toward the windows.
"Even those who survive are dying faster than they should."
"What do you mean?"
The serum.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?